The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast here on CBS Sports. That's Tom Fornelli. That's Bud Elliott. I'm Chip Patterson. Come to you live at youtube.com/cover3 and all across the 24/7 Sports Facebook network. Thank you for tuning in and watching live. Smash that subscribe to the channel. Smash that like button on this video. We appreciate it. You can come and jump in the chat. If you are listening to this on an audio platform or later on or watching, guess what? You can be an active participant even though you aren't in the chat. How can you do that? Well, you can leave us a mailbag question. Leave us a 5-star review. In that review, put your mailbag question. We will tackle it in a future mailbag episode. The mailbag is on the way. We are going to dive in there, taking a look at the Michigan Wolverines, both sort of big picture and also immediately as it pertains to the recruiting trail. Some cover three over-unders that were submitted by a listener that we like a lot, and a unique look at who we think some of the more, you know, entertaining teams of college football might be in 2022. But we hinted at it as we were doing the ACC win totals earlier in the week. Remember Atlantic on Monday, Coastal on Wednesday. Go back and check those out if you haven't already. Big Ten Media Days was this week. Kevin Warren got up at the podium. He was aggressive. He was not brazen, but I will at least say that, you know, he was talking a big game about, you know, where the Big Ten had come from, what could potentially be in the future. Some notes that I do think are important are, number one, that he has not ruled out any further expansion beyond the 16-team membership that will be once USC and UCLA are added to the fold in a few years. He is sending messages that might be a little bit mixed or, you know, going against what we've heard from some other athletic directors in the Big Ten. He also has said that he is in favor of college football playoff expansion. Of course, that news coming as the Big Ten was one of three conferences to vote against college football playoff expansion when they had that 8-3 vote a little bit earlier on in the year. That there are some other issues that came up as well. But the one thing that was interesting to me, Dennis Dodd had a report for CBSSports.com from the Big Ten Media Days where he indicated that Cal, Stanford, Oregon, and Washington were some of the potential schools that were being evaluated by the Big Ten if there is going to be further expansion. Those are not unfamiliar names, as we've had these discussions on the Cover 3 Podcast about who might be in the line for the Big Ten for many reasons that we've detailed. But he also said in that report that the way that Kevin Warren was talking, you know, made some around college sports, you know, perk up like, oh, okay, all right. He's, you know, this isn't exactly calming the waters right now as it pertains to conference realignment. So I guess I wanted to start with, was there anything from Kevin Warren's address or anything from the buzz around or reporting around Big Ten Media Days that leads you to believe that we are on the verge of more moves in the conference realignment chess game anytime soon?
No.
Okay. Confident?
As confident as you can be. Okay. Oregon, Washington, Cal, and Stanford are being evaluated. Well, duh.
Like, I mean, I think they're being evaluated by everybody. Like, yeah, if you think the Pac-12 is about to fall apart, you do your research and you get your book reports together on all these schools so that you don't have to do it in a hasty way if the Pac-12 does fall apart.
Yeah. The Big Ten's not moving again until Notre Dame makes a decision about what it's going to do. And maybe Notre Dame has made the decision, but there's been reports, you know, Notre Dame's out there looking for like $75 million a year in a TV deal. And if it can get that, it's going to stay independent. But if Notre Dame does stay independent and says no to the Big Ten, and the Big Ten has to add two schools, which two of those four together without Notre Dame bring, you know, added value to your television deal and to your conference partners as far as what you'll be able to give out. I don't know that those two on their own without like Cal and Stanford, I don't think so. Oregon and Washington, I think, would be the more attractive. But money wise, do those two alone make enough money to make it worth it for everybody in the conference? I don't know. That would be up to the TV markets. But I touched on it a little bit yesterday. Nothing Kevin Warren said this week made me feel good.
If you had to bet, better odds that Stanford and Cal are in the Big Ten in 10 years or that they're not playing FBS football in 10 years?
Big Ten.
Yeah. I would go not playing football.
I would say it's more likely they're in the Big Ten, but I don't think they'd be like some huge favorite. Cause I could see, like, we've talked about it plenty of times. I could see Cal giving up football. I don't think Stanford's going to give up football.
Right.
See, I didn't think so either, but like I heard Pat Forty talk the other day and his daughter swam at Stanford and he was kind of like, I don't know how serious they, you know what I mean? Like they don't have to do this, even though they have all the money in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, Stanford has the issue where they lose all these kids who should have that extra year because they can't get into grad school at Stanford. Right. It's just, it's a tough thing. Dodd did not have Miami, Florida State and North Carolina, right?
No.
In his report. No. McMurphy did. I would put all three of those above the Big Ten trying to expand further west, because if the Big Ten's partner is going to be Fox, Fox does not have those regionals anymore, right? Because it's Bally's. So they do not have all these super late night TV slots they need to fill. They probably just want to have one, maybe two late night TV slots they can fill. And they can achieve that with the best properties on the West Coast, which they just got. I don't know that Fox needs to have additional late night TV slots to fill, unless that's going to be the secondary partner for the Big Ten needing those. Because Kevin Warren talked about wanting to have a broadcast partner and then more of a digital partner. But I'm not really clear, Tom. Like, I know you were listening to it pretty hard. Do you think that meant sort of, we're assuming Fox plus the Big Ten Network as the secondary, or is it like Big Ten Network just exists, Fox plus another thing?
I have no inside information, or I think it'll be Fox. I think the Big Ten Network will still get stuff, and I think there will be another partner, whether that's CBS, NBC, whoever that ends up being. I think they will get some piece of it. But I'm too depressed now because we're talking about this, isn't like you just said. Well, you know, Fox doesn't need to fill its West Coast slots as badly. Like, that's what this is.
Yeah, this is a college football podcast, and you're doing media analysis,
filling time slots for content for their streaming services. Like, this is what I mean.
This is why bowl games exist, guys.
Yeah,
like the reason why there's all these bowls is because ESPN needs some content to throw on during the day when you're home from work over the holidays.
Yeah, like the conferences are just their content now. And like I said on yesterday's show, like Kevin Warren said, he was really excited about USC and UCLA because of the content that they'll be able to produce together. Like, dude, I almost swore. It's a football game. Why are we talking about it like it's a freaking YouTube short or it's an Instagram live? It's like, come on. I just hate this. Like, and he said, you know, they're going to disrupt the industry. And like you said, Chip, he's making,
I love that line, by the way. I listened to that.
It's like, yeah, he's disrupting by, you know, floating it out. We could, you know, we could be expanding. You know, we're going to be aggressive. We're going to do this. It's like, just run a damn conference, man. You're not running a television network.
So the athletic directors, Iowa's athletic director, I believe, Gary Barta, I believe, he said this several weeks ago. And then even more recently with some of the administrators that were around the Big Ten, it seems like on a school-by-school basis within the Big Ten, they're comfortable where they are. And it's not that they are stating that they are against expansion or any expansion that, like you mentioned, Tom, might include Notre Dame. But as they have been contacted, I think that their analysis is much like we were saying with any of these West Coast additions, where my pie would get smaller. And it was even mentioned in the Dodd article that, you know, while USC and UCLA, it was confirmed this week, will be joining the Big Ten as full members, aka full checks that match everything else that everyone else gets. That if you were to add in an Oregon, a Washington, a Stanford, or a Cal, that they might have to get smaller revenue checks. And if that's going to be the case, boy, now we're starting to really disrupt the big happy family. And how are we going to go and figure this out? My sense that I've gotten as it pertains, I want to get to college football playoff expansion too before we get into the mailbag. My sense that I've gotten is that while the Big Ten as a conference might be evaluating all of its next moves, and these next moves might not come for a long time, the conference membership, which has to vote on these issues in order to be able to add new members are looking at many of the options that are out there available and thinking that adding them to the table only means we get less money per school per year.
Yeah, but I will say for Stanford, a lot of school presidents will happily vote to add Stanford to the Big Ten because then they get to pretend that, you know, we are in the same academic realm as Stanford.
Being a Big Ten school has like an academic, like that's a,
it is, but there aren't many Stanfords in the Big Ten though.
I don't think the Big Ten's going to change its name. Very, very quick sidebar, right? You can't mess up that branding. You haven't changed it, even though you haven't had 10 teams for a very long time. So whether it's 11, 12, 14, 16, 18, 20, 24, I think we're still calling it the Big Ten, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's all that matters now is the brand. The brand has to be strong.
All right.
It may not make them more money per school right now, but there is sort of an aspect of we need to try to gather up the best possible additions because we know we're going to go to a bigger conference eventually because we expect the SEC to do so at some point. So even though we may not make more money per school right now, this is protecting us from being a second-class conference compared to the SEC down the line. It's why you want to go out and get the best possible schools that you can, even if in the short term it doesn't make you more money.
Well, here's a question for you. Being quote-unquote second-class to the SEC, what the hell does that even mean? I mean, what's the punishment? Like, what's the downside?
Well, the downside is money, right? And
our schools are only making $100 million a year. Oh, right. God, how are we going to survive? It's a pissing contest.
That's Kevin Warren's job, though. It is a pissing contest.
It's just who can get the biggest check? I mean, who the hell cares, man?
Like fans shouldn't care. I mean, I got into this with Maryland fans, right? Because like Talia was like, hey, our goal is to win the Big Ten. I was like, well, dude, I mean, it's not your call on this, but Maryland took a check because they needed the money and they traded the chance to ever win a conference title again in football, basically, unless things drastically change, for the check. Maryland's there now to give you that DC market, that Baltimore market, and to take some losses. That's what it is. So like, no, you're not going to win a Big Ten title ever, Maryland, probably. I mean, I'll be dead before they do, I would assume. You know, but it's not really good for fans. I thought about this. Like, why are Mississippi State fans cheerleading the addition of Texas and Oklahoma? That just means that the odds that you have a really special team and that team cashes in with a title decrease because it's two more teams that are better than your program. And it's like, yeah, like how much money we're making now. If you're one of these top-tier teams, awesome, cool. The money, you may find a way to spend the money. It really helps you. If you're like Mississippi State, or if you're one of these lower tier teams that actually cares about football, because I think like some of these schools, like if Duke were to join, they don't really give a damn about football for the most part, but they'll be able to like, hey, well, we can use $100 million in basketball pretty well. But if you're one of these lower tier programs that actually cares about football, expansion is not really a good thing for you of these leagues because it just, you're going to be like, hey, man, you remember when that one of our best teams of all time by the power ratings went 8-4?
Mm-hmm.
That's what's going to happen.
But you could still make the college football playoff if we've got 16 teams and nothing but automatic qualifiers. Because
no automatic qualifiers. None.
Another headline to come out of this week is, number one, Kevin Warren says, I'm in favor of college football playoff expansion. Again, he voted against it. But, you know, I say that with the very quick follow that what he voted against was a 12-team model that included it all being owned and run by ESPN. And yes, he said, I am in favor of multiple media rights partners, which, as Bud just mentioned, means that the media rights giant that rhymes with stocks probably would like to get some of that college football playoff. And so he would like to see multiple media partners. He would like to see the college football playoff divvied up. He would like to see it expanded. He also has said via Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic that he is softening his stance on automatic qualifiers. And so as they're all coming to the negotiating table, oh, by the way, little birdie over here, Ohio State Athletic Director Gene Smith said, you can't ignore all the talk of 16. Gene, who said 16?
Who was talking about 16?
Who was talking about it? So
I'm all for 16.
I feel like we're moving the Overton window. We're throwing out all these different trial balloons. We're trying to zero in on what the negotiations are going to be. We've got two upcoming meetings. And again, no expansion before the initial contract runs out. And so we'll be entering a new college football playoff era in 2026. So, you know, whether it is automatic qualifiers, that seems to be something that's negotiable. The media rights partners, that seems non-negotiable. It seems like that is something that, you know, the Big Ten is going to lead the charge on and try to make sure that there are multiple bidders and the college football playoff is awarded to multiple networks. Number three, the number apparently is something that's negotiable. Where do we land on this? And what were your thoughts on some of the, you know, conference, some of the like Kevin Warren, Gene Smith, some of the posturing that's been done this week about the future of the playoff?
You kind of hit the nail on the head. Like, yeah, the Big Ten voted against the playoff expansion originally, but it had nothing to do with expansion. It was just they wanted to delay it until they can get more bidders to increase the money that they could get for it. My biggest thing wasn't even the 16 teams, which I'm firmly against, but honestly, once you go to 8, 12, 16, what the hell does it matter? There's still only going to be four or five teams in any given year that can win it, no matter how big your playoff field is. But for me, it was Warren saying he softened his stance on automatic qualifiers. So we're going to have a 16-team playoff, which is seven SEC teams, four Big Ten teams, and then five teams from other places. Cool. Because, well, that's going to be super exciting every year.
Do you think Kevin Warren actually wanted automatic qualifiers, or do you think he just hung on to the automatic qualifiers as a way or as an excuse to vote no, when the real reason for voting no was we're going to sign with Fox. We want Fox to get a piece of this playoff, not just ESPN, since ESPN owns the SEC.
No,
that's like, I don't ever believe that Kevin Warren wanted automatic qualifiers. I think that was an easy excuse to vote no on this thing.
That's 100% what it was for the most part. But it's the same time. How could you argue out of one side that you're worried about your own conference and you're trying to do what's best for your conference and then say you don't want automatic qualifiers when we all know how that's going to end up?
It is conference, though, right?
No, it's not. It's not going to be best for the Big Ten to have seven SEC teams in the playoff every year. How is that good for the Big Ten? So they get the shit kicked out of them by the SEC every season?
Without automatic qualifiers, wouldn't the Big Ten get more teams as a percentage of the pie?
Yeah, but
I mean, Kevin Warren's goal is to make money for the Big Ten.
Are you not the same person who 10 minutes ago who said it was important for the Big Ten not to play second fiddle to the SEC? But so at least this way you're getting four teams in and they're all losing to SEC teams? Aren't you still second fiddle to the SEC?
You are. And I look on the field, you've been second fiddle to the SEC for a long, long time, right? Like the only team that has won a title in anybody. Well, I guess Michigan shared a title.
So
but
if you like create a format,
money wise, you're not second fiddle.
If you create a format which allows the SEC to get more teams in than everybody else, how the hell are you ever going to catch the SEC?
I don't think you're going to have materially more SEC teams than you will Big Ten teams. Maybe one a year, but I don't think you're going to have a scenario where you're getting eight SEC and only three Big Ten.
If you
there's
win
a lot
nine
more
games
bad
in
Big
SEC,
Ten to beat up on and elevate your record.
If you win nine games in the SEC, there's like a law, there's like an amendment to the Constitution that says you have to be ranked in the top 10.
All right, look,
are you kidding me?
But 16 opens the door to Wisconsin.
Okay, so what do you think will be the normal split?
Like, when we think about in the 14 model, in a 14 model, Wisconsin, Penn State, like there have been Big Ten teams and programs that have been knocking on the door just on the outside looking in that I do think in a 16-team model would be able to give the Big Ten a representation that, to Bud's point, is maybe not the exact number for number of the SEC, but is definitely going to be further ahead of most of the other conferences.
I don't think the SEC is going to have seven teams in, but I do think that you're going to, in a 16-team field, you are frequently going to see five SEC teams in there. Frequently. So they're going to be making up about a third of the field on average.
And honestly, that's probably not representative of how many SEC teams are truly among the top 16. Because normally I think it's probably about eight.
Yeah.
You know, like, but five, to your point, if we have five SEC teams, have you seen any plans of what a 16 team would look like in terms of there's no auto bids, but you're going to want to avoid antitrust. So you're probably going to find some way to get some of these G5 teams with good records in there, right? How many non-SEC Big Ten teams are getting in on a 16 playoff annually? Seven, eight?
Yeah. But if you break away from the NCAA and your playoff, you're just your own self-governing thing and you are giving, you know, you're paying players and you're doing all that, would you have to worry about antitrust laws if you're now suddenly a private entity? Whereas it's like you, the Big Ten, question. And a quote-unquote third league, And then it's just like, ah, we'll just eight SEC teams, eight Big Ten teams, F everybody else.
I think that if you say this is an open playoff, this is an open championship available to all bowl eligible 131 FBS teams, no automatic qualifiers, just top 16 teams get in, then that's how you avoid, you know, getting sued for collusion, because you're going to back model it and you're going to find all of these 11-1, 12-0 teams that have all finished in the top 16. You're going to be able to say at 16, we've been able to get in Coastal Carolina. We've been able to get in, UCF. We've been able to get in Cincinnati in the Peach Bowl year, not just the playoff year. Like you start to build this an argument that says we want to make this as big as possible. We want to make this as open as possible instead of getting hung up in the automatic qualifiers, when in reality, you know that all you're going to get is the bigger brands and the best programs, because the selection committee has already shown with the way that they've picked the playoff in the past that they are going to favor the teams that pass the eye test. The eye test has the best talent and oftentimes the bigger budget and the biggest brands.
Go ahead, Tom.
No, you go. I've been cutting you off all damn day, so you go.
Oh, I usually cut you off, so this is turnabout. I like it. So I do like the idea of 16 in that I think it will create more on-campus games. And just from talking to different guys, administrators and whatnot, one of the things they did not like about the original proposal was how many of these games were taking place at bowl sites. And they're like, look, man, we're already asking our fans to travel to Atlanta for the SEC title game, or Charlotte, or Indianapolis. Is it in Indy long term now? That's probably the permanent home.
I don't know if it's like long term contractually agreed, but yeah, I think
they should play it in Soldier Field, though. In my opinion, that would be awesome.
Does it have a dome yet?
I mean, it's Soldier Field.
No, I'm saying that's why it's Big Ten.
When the Bears build their new stadium in Arlington Heights, I'm pretty sure that Chicago will then become a possible destination, but not now.
So I think you would have more home games, which would be interesting. I also wonder if they make it open, if they just make it very mathematical, which, of course, there's some downsides to that. We saw with the BCS at times it could be kind of gamed. But if you made it more strength of schedule based, that's how you keep out the G5 teams that you don't want, because that's how, like, hey, man, sorry. You have to play really hard strength of schedule if you want to get into the national playoff. You can't just game your way to 11-1 and expect to get in. And then your anti-competitive complaint is, well, hey, how do we do that if you guys won't play us? And like, oh, sorry, right? That's what the metric says. More home games would be good.
I just think, like, if you're not going to have automatic qualifiers and kind of like what you're saying, I think there, you know, the BCS or whatever, there needs to be a formula that is not human poll related in any way. It needs to be completely just metrics. You decide on what the metrics are, you weight things how you weight them, and you have to be completely open about how the process works, and you have it based on that kind of formula, where conference wins, maybe you weigh them more, or you weight like you like non-conference, you can decide if there's a strength of schedule metric to that. But I think that conference wins need to be weighted equally. Like, I think a Big 12 win needs to be just as equal to an SEC win, even though power ranking wise, not the case, but that'll never happen. We know that.
Yeah. I would like it not to be power rating based, even though power ratings ideally are going to give you the best teams. This is college football. I do think that a little bit of my older senses would say I'd like to reward the lack of losses.
I think the rankings should be merit based, not predictive.
I agree, merit-based, but you can also do like strength of record, which is merit-based, because you can game your way to a really good record, like just by not playing anybody. Mm-hmm. And there are teams that do that annually. And so part of this is, if you make it mostly based on, you know, like your strength of record, which is heavily incorporated with, you know, with schedule strength. And I would put a dominance factor in there, because I do think like that's an important thing that we lost with the BCS when they took it out and the BCS results got worse. But that aside, you will have much better regular seasons. Even though we're going to talk about, hey, the playoffs take away from the regular season, if you make this thing heavily dependent on strength of schedule and strength of record, you know that you will have to schedule up in order to make it in. So that is how we don't have the regular season be quite as devalued as I think it could be otherwise if we go to 16. Also, I think 16 creates buys, right? You would have to give the top four buys, and then you have like 5-12. And
No. If 16 makes it. Yeah, 16 makes it an even bracket. Just line it up like the NCAA tournament regional.
You wouldn't want to give them buys?
12 gives you buys. 16.
Sorry, 12 gives you buys.
Yes. 16 is just the line them
16,
up.
You're playing 16, and then you're playing 8, 9, and so on.
How often is a 1 beat a 16 then in this? I mean,
not often at all. It's going to be no different than the basketball.
Well, no. Totally disagree.
Oh, no, you're right. Because there could be a year where a 16 team is just a blue blood having a down season.
Well, and a 1 versus 16 in basketball is really a 1 versus 64.
Yeah.
This is like a 1v4.
It's more like a 1 versus like 268.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, right, because the
351 teams in the sport, and you're like, your predictive rating metric, your power rating of those 16 seeds are often outside of the top 200.
But I too, like, if we're going to do like this metric, though, like you said, they should include margin of victory. And if you're worried about teams running it up, just cap the margin of, you know, victory at a certain point, whether it's like 20. I mean, that's what I do in my ratings. I cap it at 25 points.
You could do like at what point does the game enter statistical garbage time?
Yeah.
Which would reward you for, you know, blowing teams out early, not piling on late.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, I like that. One more theory here I want to kick at you guys. So when I first heard the 16, and it was right on the heels of Kevin Warren talking about his own thoughts on expansion, I thought about it very simply. And again, this is the way that my brain is broken, where we should not be talking about media rights and media watch here on the Cover 3 podcast. But if you're going to divvy it up, then 16 is just more games.
Yeah.
Like ESPN is still going to want to have as many games as possible. And if you're going to bring somebody else to the table, they would like to have as many games as possible. No one's going to get the whole daggum playoff. So what do? We just create more games to divvy up. So it's like the talk of 16, you just can't ignore. And it's like, well, we haven't been talking about it. Oh, but maybe you have in those conversations with your consultants as you've been getting together and going over how much more money can be made if we create these more games as we divvy them up between the networks.
Yeah, it's pretty simple. Like if you go to 16 and say it's Fox and ESPN who end up having the rights to it.
And the Cover 3 podcast, we will submit our bid.
Yes, we will.
Butcher Box Meat. Our bid for college football playoff coverage, which includes live streams on youtube.com/cover3 with live commentary from us. We will pay Butcher Box Meat for the rights to be able to have one college football playoff game.
But it's easy to divvy up. If it's two broadcast partners, each gets 7 a year, and then they rotate who gets the title game. If you go to 3, each gets 5 a year, and you rotate who gets the title game on a 3-year basis. You know, that's what it's going to end up looking like.
Yep.
You know, we had to check off that list for the upcoming season. Like, which products would you endorse?
Right.
Dude, like, if Just for Men consultants are watching, we could do like the Just for Men, like brush in beard gel. Like, look at this show. I mean, like we're like perfect for this. Everybody's like, going gray. We could really just.
I like the gray in my beard.
All of a sudden, we're just like jet black one day.
No, I like the gray in my beard. I think it gives me an air of intelligence that listening to me simply doesn't.
I treated it like iTunes terms and conditions. I just checked all, agreed.
Yeah. Whatever. Just like feminine products. You know,
yes,
it.
Yes. Sponsored.
We'll take them.
Why not? Absolutely.
Never get that not so fresh feeling. I know I do.
Oh, coming up on the other side, we will dive into the big old bag of mail, starting with a very interesting question, especially as it pertains to the Big Ten and the future of the Big Ten. Michigan or Notre Dame? Who wins a national championship next? We'll get into that and more next.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
Should you ever set foot outside of the motel, you will be shot.
Don't miss the new Showtime limited series based on the international bestseller.
For the last 4 years, I've been a prisoner.
Why are they keeping you here?
Starring Emmy Award winner Ewan McGregor.
This is the brave new world that you dreamt of.
Be very careful. You are still a prisoner here.
Everything in this new world comes at cost.
This is
still my country.
A Gentleman in Moscow, now streaming on Paramount Plus, only with the Paramount Plus with Showtime plan.
Well, Cover 3 fans, we are so appreciative of all that you do. And now we're just asking for a little bit more, just 60 seconds of your time. We want you to nominate us all the way to the final round of the People's Choice Podcast Awards. We are a nominee for the Best Sports Podcast category. And if you can just go to podcastawards.com/app/signup, toggle down to the sports category, nominate the Cover 3 podcast. The whole process takes less than 60 seconds. We've included a link at the top of the episode description as well. We're also very thankful for all the questions that have filled up the big old bag of mail. You can always do that by leaving us a 5-star review and put your question in the mailbag episode. We'll put your question in the big old bag of mail for a future mailbag episode. This first question comes from Ryan. Love the pod as always, guys. With the recent signing of Lloyd Carr's son by Notre Dame, I'm beginning to miss that old-fashioned hate between Michigan and Notre Dame. In a house of Michigan, I'm the sole Notre Dame guy, so I wanted to hear from you all. Who wins their next title first, Notre Dame or Michigan? Definitely not biased here at all.
That house must be insufferable. Notre Dame, I would guess, simply because Notre Dame doesn't have to go through Ohio State every year to get there.
Yeah, I would agree. I'll say Notre Dame, unless Michigan decides it wants to play NIL before kids enter. Like Michigan, if you look at Harbaugh's comments, they seem very intent. And I'm kind of answering another question we had a couple weeks back that I was not on the show for.
It's on the show today. That's what you're thinking.
Oh, I'm going to save this then.
It's coming up next. That's okay. Yeah. You know, try to craft sequencing an album, you know, have one thing lead into another, a couple interludes, some stuff.
Did you text it today? Cause I did not, like, I didn't read the text group other than just the pictures we were sending to our families,
our Instagram feed and our text chat.
The answer is Notre Dame. Cause Notre Dame's been there more often. Notre Dame played for a BCS national championship in 2012. They made the college football playoff in 2018, made the college football playoff in 2020. The teams that they lost to in 18 and 20 were the best teams in college football each of those seasons. And they were inarguably, in my opinion, one of the three best teams in the sport that year. So Michigan had a great season, winning the Big Ten for the first time since Lloyd Carr and making the college football playoff for the first time since the college football playoff started. But the program between the two of them that has been knocking on the door much closer was Notre Dame. And Michigan's performance against Georgia, which again, like Notre Dame, at the time looked like they were just getting worked, but the team that they ended up losing to went on to win the national championship. I give an edge to the Irish. And with Marcus Freeman moving forward, it does seem like Notre Dame is in a position that it is not going to be aged out of college football anytime soon. The hangover is old enough that not even all of our coworkers were able to get the reference when they did Notre Dame released the hangover inspired short film to debut their uniforms for the Shamrocks.
Who didn't get it?
I'm not going to call them out. The kids.
The kids.
All right. I mean, listen, man, the hangover is about 15, 17 years old at this point. Mm-hmm. Yeah. See, not all those jokes are going to hit quite the same, but I do think that the brand of Notre Dame. I saw Stephen Godfrey call it the likable Irish campaign. It doesn't look like they're keeping up with the times in a big way.
What had happened to the world when Stephen Godfrey likes Notre Dame? Like, you want to talk about the world, like the college football world being turned on its head. Stephen Godfrey's like, I like Notre Dame. Hey, I think they're cool.
I haven't talked to Godfrey about this. I'm only reciting what he shared on Twitter. I don't know if he likes Notre Dame or whether
he loves it.
I'll text him real quick.
He's the biggest Irish fan in the country right now.
I think he's providing analysis to say that it is a likable Irish campaign.
Stephen Godfrey is of the opinion that Notre Dame is the only thing standing between us and professional college football, leagues.
I mean,
it's not untrue.
That's not untrue.
No, but he's just...
As long as Notre Dame remains independent, college football will at least hold some semblance of the format that we have been working in for the last 15 years.
He's got a Notre Dame tattoo on his bicep now.
Speaking of aging and adjusting to the new era, this next question comes from Tyler. Tyler says, gentlemen, love the show. Makes my drive to work every morning a bearable endeavor. My question is in regards to Michigan recruiting. Typically, the Wolverines finish around the 8 to 15 range by the year's end. However, this year, being that NIL is a big-time factor, UM has been incredibly underwhelming thus far, getting mollywopped by recruiting rivals, specifically Notre Dame, and losing out on 2 5-star quarterbacks in their own backyard. Regent Jordan Acker, former tight end Jake Butt, and other prominent Wolverines seem to think that a market correction will come due, and paying high schoolers big money before they take a snap in college will destroy locker rooms and cultures. Is Michigan's lack of, quote, pay-for-play mentality, even in the NIL era, going to set the Wolverines back from where they want to be? Or is this slow play on NIL with the, quote, transformational, not transactional approach, that will it have any kind of merit?
The questioner's fears are well-founded. This will set Notre Dame back. Notre Dame has got to be willing to play ball with recruits with NIL before they get on campus. It's not enough just to take care of kids once they get on campus. I know it's not legal, but also there has to be some sort of enforcement arm that you actually fear is going to do something about this, and I don't think that that is going to happen. I think we will see a market correction. I think that market correction will be in the way that he's not anticipating it. I think it'll go up, right? We're already seeing this. Some of these kids who last year got NIL deals at the deadline, I think would have gotten a lot more if they were 2023 kids and not 2022. Just knowing what the prices of some of these kids were, like I know a really, really good DN who went for $250K. I think if he had been a 23 as opposed to 22, he'd probably get 500 a year. Just, you know, based on based on where he was ranked. You know, like a top 10, top 15 kid nationally. That's not crazy to think at this point. Not when quarterbacks are making, you know, $2 million. Now that's AAV, it's backloaded. But yeah, I mean, this is one of the reasons when NIL passed that I was so bullish on what Michigan could do. But then they don't seem to be doing the pre-enrollment NIL stuff, which you have to do. Yes, it's an inducement. Yes, that's what they said the purpose of NIL was for. It was not inducement, but at the same time, the real purpose of NIL was to kicking and screaming, avoid paying the players out of our own revenue any way possible. So doors are open. We're not going to make any rules. Let the states decide it.
Go ahead.
No. So the other thing that I think hurts them is Harbaugh's flirtation with the NFL.
Yes.
But this could all turn around very fast. Notre Dame or Michigan could be pretty damn good this year. They have a very easy schedule. Then they could be really good in 23 after Ohio State loses a whole bunch of guys. That's 2-3 really good seasons in a row to build on. And then you just decide, hey, we will play ball a little bit. We'll stop losing these kids and have them flip to schools, you know, that will play ball. And like, why is Michigan pretending that this is a bad thing? And it's not going to destroy locker rooms. Like, have you ever been in the workplace? Some people make more than others. This is just America. I think these are just silly tropes that they feed to their high and mighty fans.
Yeah. Would it count as NIL if Harbaugh buys your baby from you before you come to campus?
Purchase?
I saw that.
I'm just saying, he's willing to buy them if you want to give them up.
I thought he was just willing to raise them.
Yes, he will raise your child. Yeah. I'm making it, yes.
Yeah.
I'm saying that could be NIL.
The name of your child, the image and the likeness, now being raised by Jim and Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
I think
I hope he cleared that with Sarah before he came out and said that publicly, though.
Sarah's like, what?
Yeah. Sarah's like, he said, what?
Huh? So I think that Michigan has always tried to play the we don't do it like they do card, right?
Yes.
They are always going to do that. I don't see them flipping the switch on this. I see them trying to play the, you know, we are the do it the right way program, and even as the rules are going to change, they will always be on the back end of that. I mean, it's like sports gambling legalization across the country. There are some states that, you know, are not going, they're going to be the 43rd state. You know, they are going to be the last one that's drug across the finish line on this. Same things with a lot of the makeups of legalization throughout the country. And I think that Michigan, when it comes to using the NIL opportunities on the recruiting trail and playing ball, I foresee them culturally continuing to do this
high and mighty act. I don't think that they're going to flip anytime soon. And if Bud's right and the numbers continue to go up and they only continue to not be a part of this, then the market correction is going to be, they're not finishing 8-15 anymore. They're going to be finishing in the 20s.
They could finish number one if they just weaponize their alumni base. You can buy your way to the number one overall class if you have a quality program like Michigan does and you have a, you know, a proven coaching staff.
And I will say, willingness. I know I was joking about Harbaugh a second ago, but like, I do kind of take some offense to the high and mighty portrayal. Maybe they just
of have Michigan fans.
I'm just saying, no, like maybe the school just has different priorities. Maybe their game isn't, we care about, we want to be competing for national titles and we'll do whatever it takes to win national titles. Maybe that's not their ultimate goal.
Yeah. I agree. I don't think Michigan does try to compete at the highest level. I think they try to compete at sort of like that, just below that.
Which is why I had never thought that Jim Harbaugh was on the hot seat quite, no matter how many former players were calling for him to get gone, because they continued to win their home games. They continued to not have any scandal, had good graduation rates, and the donations from the boosters were good. So as long as you were still hitting all those check marks, the fact that Ohio State was working you year after year after year after year, or mollywopped, as Ryan has said.
In the, great word. I love that word so much.
Then they were still going to be okay with you know, where things were in terms of the state of the program under Harbaugh. Very interesting. All right, let's go. This next question comes from Jackson. Hey guys, love the pod. It's consistent, great content. My mailbag question is this: if college football had something like NBA League Pass or NFL Red Zone, what team would you like to put on and just watch for a spurt? And I mentioned this in the text, but when I read this question, I saw it as, you know, you've got a little bit of time on a Saturday and you just want to sit down and watch some fun college football, flip it on. You've only got like 30-ish minutes. Who's the team that you're looking for on the schedule that you want to go and pop in on their game that you feel like will be the best watch or the most entertaining?
I think a lot of the blue blood programs that you already watch would qualify, but eliminating them from the conversation, Coastal is a fun watch just because that's a fun and interesting offense. Kent State is a fun watch just because that is a fun and interesting offense. And I mean, defensively, it's hard to find.
Troy. More.
Yeah.
But it'll be pretty salty.
Yeah. But it's hard to like know year in and year out which lower level teams are going to be really interesting defensively.
If only got to watch for like 30 minutes, I feel like Maryland is going to provide incredible entertainment.
Yeah.
I think that, I was like, the first two that came to mind for me were Maryland and Wake Forest. Like, I just, because the offense could be really fun. And I also think the offense is going to get the ball back really quick. You know, we're just going to get to see a lot of plays and we're going to get to get the most bang for our buck in terms of that. You know, if you've only got to watch something for a spurt, unfortunately, we are going to have to say goodbye to some of those, you know, beloved teams that deliver those unders on windy Saturdays in the middle of the country. Like, much love to you, Kansas State, but if I've only got 30 minutes, I might only get to see what, two series, one series.
Well, I will say, I do think with Colin Klein calling the plays and Adrian Martinez at quarterback, that could be an interesting offense to watch. Again, I think we talked about it in the Big 12 win total shows. I think maybe some people are a little too high on what they can accomplish, but I think it could be interesting to watch.
And then as I was starting to look out, you know, at some of the lower levels as well, beyond Maryland and Wake Forest, Kent State also came to mind. And as I was trying to, you know, really put together like who's a good West Coast team that I would want to watch that you could just flip on and feel like you were going to get really solid football right away. In fact, Utah State.
Yeah. I'm curious about them this year. I mean, if we can, I don't know how long we want to go on Utah State, but hours. I feel like they were one of the, they were like one of the, like the most lucky teams last year.
No, that's Hart. That is Hart. Oh, okay. When you rally back from double digit deficits in multiple games, you got a care factor, baby. You've got a good culture.
I agree. They were very lucky last year, but I think this year getting Levi Williams from Wyoming, who I think is pretty good, I think that they could just be genuinely good this year. So they're going to be an interesting team to watch.
I think the bottom three teams in the Mountain West, and they may not be the three teams that people think, might be the worst three teams of any league in the country.
Word?
Like if Wyoming really drops off, right? Or if UNLV doesn't take a step. But I think Wyoming's probably the third worst team in that league. I think Hawaii and Nevada might be really, really bad. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, extremely bad teams.
Yeah,
so I think you will have a high win total for almost everybody else in that division, because I think you're going to have some like 0 and 1s in a win column.
Yeah, I think the Mountain West will be fun at the top and be pretty bad.
Oh, I forgot New Mexico. New Mexico also is – New Mexico may be worse than Wyoming again, mm-hmm. probably.
And it was funny, Tom, you mentioned that you would eliminate some of the blue bloods that you would think of. If I'm only giving you 30 minutes and I'm trying to give you the most entertainment, I don't know if I'm giving you Georgia.
No, but I'm playing slow. I'm watching Ohio State.
Yep.
Yeah.
Watching Alabama.
Probably watching USC.
Might not watch Clemson.
Not when they have the ball. I'll watch Clemson when they don't have the ball, though.
Yeah. But then they're going to get 3 and out, and you got to go right back to the handing it off to Will Shipley.
That's why they're perfect, because I can flip back and forth.
But I like the question for sure. And again, much like the Cover 3 podcast is willing to submit a bid for the college football playoff, we'll be your red zone channel. We will pay.
We're not like Coca or Jordan have to produce it, though, right? We don't have to, because that can't be an easy job. Like when there's 50 games going at the same time.
And I don't have that Scott Hansen bladder yet. Where you're able to go from like 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. just sitting at the desk. Yeah, there you go. All you watching on youtube.com/cover3 know that Tom's already figured out the key to it. All right, this next question includes some listener props. Here we go. It comes from Nick. He says, great group banter, good mix of analysis, and great group providing a good mix of analysis and banter. I have 3 over-under props with all of the lines set at 1.5 leading into the season. First listener prop, over-under, 1.5 Pac-12 South teams that make the Pac-12 championship game. Remember, we don't have... They still are playing a division schedule, but the mm-hmm. Pac-12 championship will be decided by the 2 best conference records according to win percentage. So it is possible that 2 teams from the Pac-12 South could make it. It's possible 0 teams from the Pac-12 South could make it, but this prop is set at 1.5 Pac-12 South teams that make the Pac-12 championship game.
I'm going under simply because I think there's a good chance USC and Utah will knock one or the other out of it. Whereas I look at the North and I think Oregon's got it. We talked about it in our Pac-12 win total show. I mean, I'm high on the Ducks to begin with, but I also think they have a favorable schedule when it comes to their Pac-12 schedule. Their non-con is tough, but I think they can manage what they have to do in conference. So I think there's too high of a chance of Oregon being one of the 2 best records in the conference at the end of the year. So I'm going to go under.
It's a great question, though. I mean, a really well-set line. I thought about it. I was like, this is tough. I think Oregon and USC have a similar chance of making it. I do still have Utah as the favorite. I'll join Tom with the under just because I think Oregon's offensive line could be the saving grace, assuming they get the quarterback play they want out of Bo Nix. But USC's no slouch with all these transfers. And that's also, it's Bo Nix. It's hard to count on.
Over. We get USC-Utah rematch in the Pac-12 championship game. And whatever the result is of the first one, it's the flip of the other, and it bounces the Pac-12 from the college football playoff.
Wow. And then the winner joins the Big Ten.
Well.
Either way.
So, winner goes to the Big Ten, loser goes to the Big 12. All right. Next over-under from Nick. Every conference championship game is actually
that should be. Oh my God, that's how they should do it.
If you win, you go to the Big Ten of the SEC. You lose,
you enter the Big 12 SEC or the Big Ten SEC draft, and if you lose, you go to the everybody else draft.
Second one, over under 1.5 Cover 3 undergrad alma maters that make a bowl game. So that would be Florida State, Illinois, and North Carolina. So of those, 1.5 bowl teams.
Easily over. It's a bad line. We should have said 2.
And make it go, or 2.5, will Illinois make it?
Well, no, because there's some chance that UNC or FSU could miss. But I think 2 is a good number because it forces you to make a decision. But
win totals alone are 7.5 for North Carolina and 7 for Florida State.
Right. And what's Illinois? 4.5, Tom?
5.5, I think.
5.5. Okay. Yeah, I would probably go over 2.
Gonna go under.
You're gonna go under 2?
Mm-hmm. Sorry, North Carolina. Sorry, Florida State.
Love it.
And then this last one, over under 1.5 Power 5 conference champs to repeat as conference champs. That would mean that in, so these were our 2021 Power 5 conference champs. They were Alabama. They were Ohio State. They were Pittsburgh. They were
Ohio State didn't win the conference last year.
No, Michigan. Alabama, Michigan, Pittsburgh, Baylor, and Utah. Of those, over under 1.5 repeat conference champs this fall.
This is the one I'm most confident. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, Alabama and who?
Well, Utah's a favorite.
Yeah. Right?
So you get those two, and then you get 3 non-zero chancers in Michigan, which has a soft schedule. Baylor, which anything could happen in the Big 12, and you know Pitt, which I think could win the Coastal. I thought this was the easiest over other than the first one.
I'm going to go under. I feel pretty confident in it because I don't think Alabama's even a slam dunk to win the SEC. Georgia could win the SEC.
You want to show bet this?
No, because what are my odds?
I think just even, right? I mean, like Tom is confident on the under. I'm confident on the over. I feel like we should.
Yeah, do it. Show bet it.
Yeah.
Show bet it. Let's go.
Let's go. Add it to the dock. I'm on the under, by the way, too. But I'm not as confident because Utah would be the one that would throw me the other way. I think Alabama repeats. I will be picking USC to win the Pac-12 with a win over Utah in the Pac-12 championship game when we have to do our official conference predictions a little bit later on in the offseason or as we get closer to the regular season. I do not think Pittsburgh wins again. I do not think Michigan wins again. I do not think Baylor wins again. I am also on the under, though not as confidently and not in on the show bet. All right, let's do one more. Hey guys, I'm glad to have found you guys during the dog days of 2020. And ever since then, you have been my favorite podcast. Obviously, most college football fans are aware of the blue chip recruiting teams as you all reference them often. When you see teams that are known more as developmental programs that are recruiting at higher than they normally do, like Iowa, Kentucky, Wisconsin, etc., do you adjust your power rankings or perception of those teams for win totals or in-season bets? Logic would say that if they churn out solid players when they're in the 40s and 50s, being in the 30s or better should make them a stronger program as a whole. Thanks, on Iowa, and go Hawks. Thank you, Chris Hassel.
What really? Pass.
Nice.
I mean, yeah, it affects, like, recruiting affects my power rankings. Like, the better, more talent you have, it's going to affect how I rate you as far as gambling. As far as my expectations, there's a lot more, I think, context that has to be involved. Because, like, if you look, if Iowa's finishing, like, with a top 25 recruiting class, that's going to go a lot further in the Big Ten than it will in the SEC. Like, you could finish with a top 25. You could finish 25th nationally in the as an SEC program and be the 13th highest SEC class. So it's there's that kind of context that goes in it. But I think for me, more than anything, it just, when those teams are finishing that high, it doesn't really improve their ceiling as much as for me, as much as it just raises their floor. Like, I think a 7-5 season is much less likely.
So recruiting is oftentimes a leading indicator of where a program is going. Not always, but it oftentimes is. If, like, Kentucky and Iowa are getting higher quality recruits, which they are, and those recruits are also recruits who fit into what they do, like, they're not having pressure to go out and just chase stars, which is a thing we see some staffs do,
yes,
for sure, which is not a good thing because sometimes, like, you're getting stars who other programs didn't want for some kind of, you know, personal, off-field, mental health, whatever kind of reason it is. So if they're taking higher quality recruits who logically fit what they do, then I think you absolutely should be upgrading them because it's like recruiting also is a good look into the culture of your program. Oftentimes, if you're getting a bunch of highly rated guys, that probably means those guys had a good time on their visit. They enjoyed what your players said to them. They talked about it. The program is probably not always, but probably healthy. So yeah, I would say you should upgrade them somewhat.
it takes time for me. I don't run a power ratings anywhere close to as detailed, but I want to avoid, just because you got a recruiting class that popped, thinking that you're going to be good the next season, or maybe that you're even going to be good the next two seasons. And I want to see sustained raised level of recruiting. And then I want to start to see some of those players actually get on the field and start to show that they're going to be prepared to live up to the 4 and 5 star recruiting projections that they got. I put you on off to the side as a team to watch and a team to track in terms of your trajectory, but I try to separate those two things, especially the question said like win totals and betting. I try to make sure that I am not too influenced by that recruiting success to think that it's going to work right away, because Texas had one of the best offensive line recruiting classes that we've seen. The offensive line wasn't good in 2022. You know, it's going to take some time for them to be able to go through the process and be able to develop into the kind of player that's going to be able to make a difference in a win total, be able to make a difference against the spread on a Saturday to Saturday basis. As both of y'all mentioned, very important, but I try to be patient with these things such that I see some evidence of the recruiting rankings that have gone up on the field before I do it. Maybe I'm slow. You know, like maybe that makes me a little bit slower to the table, but I at least avoid getting distracted by the hype that way, I think.
I think it's fair.
Happy birthday, Carson Becker.
It's also your birthday. Mm-hmm. Happy birthday, Carson.
Nice.
That's what you good. Good Cover 3 listener hanging out, participating in the chat. Thanks to all of you that have been participating in the chat here. And if you are watching it later, you can see it right there. And you can always reach us on Twitter. You can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at Bud Elliott 3. You can follow me at Chip_Patterson. We will be back on Monday with the Big Ten win totals. Big Ten win totals Monday, Big Ten win totals Wednesday. Then the following week, SEC win totals, SEC win totals. Then we get into our win totals locks. Then all of a sudden, man, the season is almost here. We are excited about it. Gentlemen, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Monday.
Federal agents.
Hands where we can see them.
NCIS Hawaii is back.
About to set it all on fire.
New criminals to catch.
Armed robbery, aggravated assault, murder.
And new investigations to be solved.
These guys were good, but even masters make mistakes.
Vanessa Lachey and featuring LL Cool J.
Violent Island, you got it.
Welcome to paradise.
A new NCIS Hawaii, Monday, 10/9 Central on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.